Mini episode 1623 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1623. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. Certainly one of the more distinguished ones that we have in terms of his long career covering the intersection of TV and technology. And of course, Tomorrow Will Be Televised is where you can find all of this. And we've been pointing towards it on our Ultimate Links page at MediaVillage.com. But I understand now there's a URL for those purposes, which is far better than that. But our great friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Simon Applebaum, nobody knows better the intersection of TV and technology, and we have him on here today, as we have done most years since we've known him, just about all years, I think, covering the upfronts and the new fronts, everything to get you ready for the TV season this fall. And much like the last couple of years when there was a pandemic, this year, because of the writer's strike, it's an unusual landscape. There's just something about the 2020s where if it's not one thing, it's another thing as we go through every year. But nobody's got his finger on the pulse better than our great friend Simon Applebaum. Simon, great to have you back on, my friend. Thank you so much for being here.
It is a pleasure, Rick. Wonderful to be back with you. It's been way too long, and we're doing this at an incredibly transformative time in television. I have had more fronts to go to this year than ever before. We've had upfronts, we've had new fronts. The Interactive Ad Bureau, which puts the upfronts together, had a podcast upfront. They had a two-day play front dealing with the world of gaming, which more and more is involving the opportunity to put games on television and to play those games without having to use a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox. You just use your voice or a voice remote or a joystick that you aim at the TV set, and I think that's going to be a huge factor going forward. There's a lot happening. We had growth fronts, we had equity up fronts for Magnum, one of the top ad agencies, so it's been a record year in terms of covering fronts.
Oh, very much so, yeah, because as you said, I mean, once upon a time there was just the upfronts, and then for the last decade or so there's been the new fronts as well, maybe a little longer than that, give or take. But as I was going through all of your columns, yeah, fronts here and fronts there, fronts everywhere, with all of the innovation that's going on. And one of the things that I noticed, a real through line in your coverage in a lot of this, and this is not surprising because of the technologically advanced nature of a lot of the different fronts that you went to, is the notion of advertisers being able to take advantage of the scenario that they're in essentially right there and have the consumers basically click right through to them and to make their ads interactive with the products that people are taking in. So that's a very revolutionary thing, and I saw you reference that in many of your columns.
Yes, it looks like this is going to be the year where interactive television in different ways is going to break loose. And one of those ways, Rick, is going to be what we call video commerce, or some call it T-commerce. And the idea is that you have the opportunity to order products and services while you're watching a television program. And you do it not with your smartphone, not with your tablet, not with your laptop, not with a QR code, but directly through the television set, through your voice, your voice remote, in some cases maybe through your body language. That's because with all the talk about artificial intelligence and how it is really captured, and we can talk about that later, capture a lot of people in the world of entertainment, the bottom line is that now we're at critical mass in the number of smart TV sets and smart TV devices that have artificial intelligence built in so that you can use voice services or features like Siri, Google Assistant, and Alexa to control how you watch and use the television set, including ordering products and services. Roku is going to go forward with their project with Walmart and other retailers called Action Ads. They're also doing a TV show where it's a recipe-making show where you can order the winning recipe, again, through your television set. We understand some of the other smart TV set and device makers like Samsung and Vizio and LG are going to be doing similar projects. Peacock, the mega content service known as Universal, is going to do must-shop television before the end of the year. And we also have a smart TV smart TV product called Telly, T-E-L-L-Y, which is going to try to market their new advanced souped-up smart TV set to 500,000 people for free. There's a catch. You have to give them information about yourself, and they will try to send personalized news, stock quotes, and advertising, which you can respond to at the bottom of the television screen. So it opens up a lot of doors, and I think video commerce, if it works, is going to become a major revenue stream for television. It's going to definitely transform the whole issue of retailing, and it may bring a lot of new advertisers in, both on the national and local basis that haven't done it before. So this could be a universe changer in many, many ways, and it's something definitely to watch, especially if something like Telly works. By the way, if Telly does get those 500,000 sets in people's hands, at the time we're doing this, they've got half of that goal. They are saying that they will make millions of these sets for free and get them out to the public.
That is very interesting, and it's one of those things where I immediately think of in my head when you're saying that, the two of the more vulnerable institutions in this country on a local level are local retail and local TV stations, and that's one of the things that I would think of in terms of the networks, as the networks are looking long-term down the road and the sustainability of the network model. It's one of those things where one more thing that might not be good for local retail might be good for the networks if they can figure out a way to get in on this. And with smart TVs being almost ubiquitous now, or at least smart-enabled ones, I see no reason they couldn't do that.
Yes, the latest number, by the way, Rick, is that nearly 90% of all U.S. households have at least one smart TV set or device.
Wow.
In their possession. And it's very clear that they're watching these sets, in part because you are seeing more and more channels being launched through them. You're seeing the smart TV set makers themselves, like Samsung, LG, Vizio, etc., create these multi-channel bundles of original channels, some of which have original product. It's not just library content or archive content or acquired content. They're actually becoming channel and content makers. Roku is now making original programming. They did the Weird Al Yankovic movie, which a lot of people think might be up for an Emmy Award for Best Made-for-TV Movie this year. Could very well win. It's definitely a favorite to do so. Daniel Radcliffe's performance as Yankovic is very much in the hunt for Best Actor in a made-for-TV movie or miniseries. So you're seeing these smart TV sets and devices now getting advertising for either the bundles that they create or for bundles that they distribute, like Tubi, like Pluto TV, like Zumo, so on and so forth.
That is really interesting to contemplate, yeah, because as you pointed out there, there are so many different free entities out there that are providing quality content, as well as the pay streaming models as well. I mean, those platforms, obviously everybody knows they have a lot of great stuff, but it's not often talked about enough how much, you know, Tubi and Pluto and some of these other ones, Roku Channel, like you said, have things freebie that are so great to be able to watch as well. And as I alluded to at the top here, I know that last year we might have been starting to come out of the whole kind of pandemic kind of flavor of things as far as some of the different events that were being held. But there was probably, if I remember correctly, at least some kind of overhang still of that whole thing. You get into this year and we're pretty much free and clear of all of that, and hopefully it stays that way. But now you got the writer's strike happening, and it's one of these things where if it's not one thing, it's another, but that had to affect many of the different events that you were at, not least of which in terms of who was available to come up there and talk about some of the different presentations this fall.
Yes, this was a far different upfront environment in terms of actual in-person events post-pandemic or any time than I've ever witnessed. Because of the writer's strike, where they had picket lines set up. For example, 200 people were protesting outside Radio City Music Hall when NBC Universal opened things up Monday of Upfront Week last month, May. And everybody, with the exception of Televisa Univision, had to have their talent be basically in-house, whether it is their play-by-play people on sports, newscasters, et cetera, et cetera. There were very, very few actual actors, writers, showrunners that would normally be used to demonstrate what these services are coming up to, are going to be doing this summer, this fall, to the American public. NBC Universe, to everybody's credit, the executives who had to do triple, double duty, did recognize the writer's strike. Off the bat, I thought that NBC's executives were very, very respectful of the writers protesting. They hope that the strike is going to end soon. As we're doing this, it's now in its sixth or seventh week. They did do a videotape of writers that showed that, hey, done in advance. They did put a little blurb at the bottom of the screen saying this was done before the strike. It was a very different environment to see sports stars, like ESPN, for example, took up half of the Disney upfront on Tuesday afternoon of that week. The one that did not have a problem was Television Univision, because a lot of their acting talent, writing talent, is not part of the guild, the Writers Guild, or honoring the picket line. They were able to have a free and clear upfront event. It was really interesting to see how the executives would handle this. And for the most part, they did pretty good. The big surprise was Netflix. Netflix was supposed to do an event at the Paris Theater, which they bombed for several years. And when they found out that the writers, when they were tipped off by local police that the Writers Guild was going to not only set up picket lines outside the theater, but maybe disrupt the ceremony, they decided to go to a virtual presentation, which turned out to be a smart move and a very good move. It may have been what triggered the big boost in Netflix stock over the last month, where it's gone from under $300 a share to over $400 a share as we do this. And one of the reasons why is because Netflix did the whole 10 yards about their ad-supported tier, which has done very well, better than expected. And this is not before interactive ads come into play, or commerce ads, or doing ads on their video games, which I think ultimately will be going to move from mobile to the television set. So a lot of people, I think, were very, very, very happy with how Netflix handled things. On the other hand, you had Paramount, which did not do an upfront event this year. They decided to do sort of nights beforehand with advertisers. And frankly, I think they blew it. Why? Because they didn't do what the CW did. The CW, rather than hold a splashy event at City Center, the last one last year was fantastic with Stevie Wonder doing Superstition, one of the most, I think, poignant I've ever seen, given Mark Kedowitz in his last role as CW president. An upfront presentation. And rather than do the splash upfront, Nextstar, the new majority owners of the CW, decided, let's do a press event. Let's do a press breakfast, Park Lane Hotel, right across the street from Central Park, and let's show what we're going to do and how we're going to get by the guild in terms of the original scripted, unscripted shows we're going to do. It worked very, very well. That's exactly what Paramount should have done. Because right now, people do not know, we're talking about the public and the press, what's going to be coming up on Paramount Plus this fall, or CBS, or Nickelodeon, or Comedy Central, or Paramount Network, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I know they tried to do something different, and unfortunately, I think they blew it, because I think nobody knows what they're doing, and also I think they will pay a price for that by not telling the press, and ultimately not telling the public what they've got in store for the summer, the fall, and beyond, and how they're going to deal with the writer's strike.
Yeah, I think that's dumb. And as regards Paramount with not having an upfront there, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that the person that made that decision is the same Einstein that made the decision to sell off the streaming rights of Yellowstone to Peacock. Probably the same guy, Simon.
maybe. Incidentally, I'm very curious. The person that made that call, the head of ad sales at Paramount, is going to be in a public event in New York later this week. And I'm very curious to see if everybody gets into questions about why they decide not to do any sort of presentation, at least for press, to showcase your schedule. Paramount is not just Paramount Plus and CBS. It's all these cable networks that everybody's wondering, you know, what's happening, whether it is, again, Nickelodeon, MTV, VH1, Comedy Central, Smithsonian Channel, et cetera, et cetera. And I think even if they just did a press, nobody's saying don't do a big splashy event. Or a superstar presentation, but do something that lets the press, which comes to these presentations and advertisers present, know what's going on with all your services. And I don't think that would have been too much to ask for.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like you're waving the white flag. I mean, if you're not even showing up to show anybody what you've got going on, I think that that is that's just kind of dumb when you're one of the big boys out there too, you know, and CBS being of course a big part of everything that they got. So I don't really understand that at all. And this is a thing where, and in terms of somebody that used to be associated with some of the CBS networks here, the CW, in terms of ownership or partial ownership at the time, I thought this was very interesting, that a way to get around the writer's strike of, I believe I saw in your column, importing some programming from Canada, because I've kind of wondered why more networks don't do that. As somebody who's been north of the border a few times and seen some of their programs and shows that, you know, kind of seem interchangeable to me with some of the fare that's on American TV, it's the whole thing. What did NBC have as a slogan back in the day for the reruns? It's new to you. Well, anything that's run up in Canada, it's new to us south of the border here. So I think it's a genius strategy for them to be able to do that, because it's programming that's just sitting there available for use.
And it's even more genius because I think a lot of people still have, I think a lot of people in the media industry and to some extent the press still think, oh, Canada, second-class citizen when it comes to TV production. No longer. That has not been the case for at least several decades. You remember that CBS, for example, took a chance on shows like Due South, which was put together by Paul Haggis, the person who later won the Oscar for Crash, wonderful writer. There was Flashpoint, which, by the way, is one of the best police dramas to be done in the last couple of decades, which ran four seasons on CBS and then ran a year or two on ION Television. And I've seen some of the clips of the shows. They're really good shows. Spencer Sisters has Leah Thompson. It's well written. It's very, I think, slyly fun in a way. And you have Sullivan's Crossing, which has done very well on Canadian television. Plus, you now have Netflix and Amazon are now putting on, through Prime Video, are now putting on shows that are done in Canada, where a lot of shows on the CW used to be shot, whether it's Kung Fu or Superman and Lois and so on and so forth. So it's a great gamble by the CW because the Canadian writers go to their own guild. They're not associated with the U.S. Writers Guild, Writers Guild of America. So it's a good deal, and I think people are going to be really surprised by the quality of the programming. Canadian television has taken nice leaps up in the last decade or two, and I put them on par with anybody.
Yeah, their programming really can stand on its own 2 feet, and I think people are going to find that out as they're watching it. One of the senses that I had here in going through a couple of your columns here, there was one kind of amusing thing that kind of jumped out at me as far as if somebody wanted to demonstrate how much status that they have in today's media economy. Michael Strahan being featured at not one but two gigantic upfronts, the one for Fox and the one for Disney. That's a lot of status right there when your employers have no choice but to let you go to the other one as well.
And he was good. Michael Strahan did a great job at both places. He was a wonderful foil with Gordon Ramsay, who, yes, he threw some F-bombs at Fox's presentation, which was over at Manhattan Center. And he was very good in the Disney presentation as well. And let's not forget, and by the way, one of the things that Disney did do, although it wasn't made the presentation, is that ABC did come out with a schedule that they really consider strike-proof. If the writer's strike is not settled by, let's say, end of July, ABC will go forward with a largely unscripted news prime time. It will be game shows, including Michael Strahan's own $100,000 Pyramid, which he hosts and executive produces, which is shot here in New York. And I think it'll be shot for the first time post-pandemic, so hopefully we'll have a studio audience back there to see it in full. You also will have documentary shows. You will have news magazine programs. You will have unscripted Shark Tank. And the only scripted programming in prime time is going to be reruns of Abbott Elementary, which, by the way, won the Peabody Award the week before the upfront. So ABC is definitely set. CBS, by the way, is saying we're still going to have, you know, new episodes of Young Sheldon and Ghosts and so forth. So CBS may have to, although they have changed their summer schedule a bit because of the strike. NBC, we don't know yet. Fox, we don't know yet. And, of course, CW, we know. So there's still a lot of questions to be raised nearly a month after upfront about what is CBS going to do, what is NBC going to do, and what is Fox going to do.
This was one of these things where, again, referencing back to the pandemic for a second, it strikes me that as far as the history of the industry that the writers find themselves at a more vulnerable time than it would have been 4 or 5 years ago, because again, during the pandemic, the networks lived, they learned to live with a stripped down prime time in terms of scripted programming, and the amount of scripted programming that there is today versus what it was beforehand, and then they started flooding it with game shows and things like that at that point in time. I think clearly the powers that be must be gambling that people aren't going to miss their scripted programming as much, because there's just not as much of it as there was, at least on the networks, before the pandemic hit.
Yeah. And by the way, I want to say three more things about the Disney Upfront, which was, I think, one of the more ambitious ones that happened. It was a two-hour event, and as I said, more than half was on ESPN. First of all, I got to give Disney credit for doing something that no upfront ceremony has done in a very long time, which is devote a segment to localism. The local television station, local newscast, local media outreach. They had two of the anchors on Eyewitness News and WNBC here in New York, Bill Ritter and Shadi Benoit, actually was there to talk about the value of local television stations and local news. Great move. They were, by the way, there for the after party as well. But I thought it was a great idea. Secondly, one of the things that was off for Disney was not talking enough about Disney Plus, especially the ad-supported tier and how well it's doing. And one of the reasons why Disney stock is down, although it's bounced back up a little bit the last couple of days, is because Rita Ferro, the Disney ad salesperson, wonderful executive, one of the best in the business, was very generic about Disney Plus. Said, ad-supported tier too. Okay, she didn't mention how many subscribers they have. Didn't mention what advertisers are, how they're using the service. Yeah, we'll do shoppable ads, interactive ads. She was way too generic, didn't spend much time on it, and that was really surprising because that was what Netflix did, which was spend all their time on the ad-supported tier and how that is doing. They were very specific. 5 million U.S. and households around the world have that tier, which was much better than expected, than anyone thought. Another thing was with the Disney thing, well, actually two more things. One, was the poignant, the highlight maybe of the whole upfront week was Devon Hamlin, the Buffalo Bills player, defensive player who had the cardiac arrest during a Monday Night Football game. He was there, standing ovation. He is so grounded. He is an amazing person. And he's well on his way, by the way, to getting back in action for the Bills in the next NFL season. Also, FX did not get a lot of love. And Freeform did not get a lot of love. However, FX did have a presentation tape of Shogun, which I think is going to be one of the big miniseries either rest of this year or in 2024. However, the way they handled it was before they showed the sizzle reel of scenes from Shogun, which was incredibly impressive, they had all these like Shogun warriors like march down the aisles, do battle scenes. Like, what the heck are you doing this if you have a great sizzle reel? I didn't understand it, and I think some people were puzzled by it. I know it's gotten a little bit of a mixed response. Some people thought it was very effective. Some people, like myself, thought it wasn't. So let people who are listening to us decide about it. But I will say that I think Shogun's going to be one of the big. The remake of Shogun on FX is going to be one of the could be one of the big miniseries highlights of this coming season.
Well, that will really be something to look forward to. And again, if it airs in a climate where there's not a lot of original programming because of the writer's strike, of course, it will stand out even more if that is the case. Something that, again, anybody that's listened to us having these discussions going back well over a decade has heard us discuss repeatedly is that you were one of the first people in this line of work to really be pounding the hammer about the direction of diversity for the industry and the way that it's going, and one of the first ones to really see it kind of coming, you know, to what has been fruition here, increasingly so over the years. And a couple of the figures who stood out from your columns, some of the more famous ones that were involved in giving presentations, John Leguizamo and Byron Allen, of course, having a lot to say about this and the direction of how this is going and how it just continues to expand over time.
Yes, Byron first, I'll get to John. Byron is now become one of the big media moguls. He has really taken his company from one of the syndicators to he is going into TV on every level, whether it is a smart TV bundle like Local Now or Sports.TV, syndication, which was his original bread and butter. He owns broadcast stations. He now has a bunch of cable networks. He has the Weather Channel, which is now spun off an environmental service as well as Weathertown Espanol, which started over a year ago and doing quite well. So he is involved with every single thing. I thought his upfront presentation, first time he's ever done one in New York, was terrific. He could have been a little more specific about what they're going to do for various services like the GRIO, which is his news, information, entertainment service aimed at African Americans and the rest of us. But he is on a roll. This fall, he's going to launch not one, not two, but three court shows in syndication and on the Justice Central Network and on Local Now and through the GRIO. One is with Ebony K. Williams, who's to be a commentator on Fox News Channel and other services. Then he, when People's Court was canceled by Warner Brothers, Marilyn Milan is going to have her show. And then Judge Greg Mathis, whose award-winning series was also canceled by Warner Brothers. And ever the opportunistic person, Alan called the phone and said, Greg, want to come on my my Justice Central service and do your thing? Yep. And all three were there, by the way. And I can tell you that a lot of people were very excited about Alan's courtroom. And by the way, Alan has become the leading supplier of court shows in syndication. He's got eight or nine. When these three come on, there'll be like nine shows that are in syndication. But he also is able to maximize the viewership by having them on Justice Central, his own cable network, plus Local Now, his bundle, plus the GRIO. So it works. He is really one of the great entrepreneurs. I would love to have him on my Swampy Televised Show. I'll do an hour with him, because I think he is really with it in terms of what he wants to do in terms of really raising the profile of television produced by people of color.
He is an amazing story. I mean, I struggle to think of hardly any entertainers that have expanded into entrepreneurialism who've been more successful than him. I mean, he kind of sets the bar for anybody that's looking to make that transition and leverage the career that you've built in one way into entrepreneurialism. I mean, he just, you know, I'm in awe of the accomplishments that he has in that way. It's almost unheard of for somebody to be able to leverage a career as an entertainer to that degree of being a financial mogul.
And incidentally, Byron's Upfront, as well as a special luncheon event by Canela Media, one of the up-and-coming Spanish-language services, was held at this wonderful restaurant across the street from Rockefeller Center, from Racy Music Hall. The grilled octopus there is absolutely fantastic. If I were to pick a particular delectable that I enjoyed more than anything in the course of the Upfront Week or New Front Week, it was the grilled octopus. At Onyx, I think ANYX. Again, it's on West 50th Street, across the street from Rockefeller Center. And it's at a great restaurant, great food, but that grilled octopus, you could have a meal off that. And by the way, good move by Canela Media by doing a special luncheon event in between on Monday of Upfront Week, in between NBC Universal and Fox later that afternoon. And I hope they continue that as a tradition. It was really, really well done. Secondly, John Luziamo. For those who don't know, Luziamo now is one of the factors behind a brand new English language network aimed at Latinos and the rest of us called MeToo TV. MeToo is a website. The folks by MeToo have connected with another company, New Generation Latino, NGL. And MeToo TV launched during New Front Week and did so at the Shops at Columbus Circle, formerly Time Warner Center. Very terrific event. MeToo is based in Los Angeles. They're doing a lot of original content. Right now it's mostly unscripted, but it's going to get into scripted and a lot of other things, and Luciano is one of the major brains behind it, and it's amazing to see how that network grows over the course of its first year and beyond. But I think it's going to be a winner.
Yeah, it's a heck of a concept because, again, Spanish TV, Hispanic TV, there's a real barrier to entry. I don't have to tell everybody that for folks like myself that don't speak Spanish, but yeah, to have their content available directed at an English-speaking audience definitely opens up new possibilities for them. And as far as it goes with the grilled octopus at that restaurant, Simon, duly noted, next time I'm in town, I will take great note of that. It sounds very good. Hopefully they use gluten-free seasonings for those of us with celiac disease. But as far as it goes with the upfronts and the new fronts, anything else from any of the other events that jumps out at you that we didn't talk about yet?
Well, a couple of things. First, with the new fronts, it was interesting that Estrella Media, another one of the fast-rising Spanish language services, did both a new front event and their own event as well, which was virtual. They are going to be launching a very interesting two-hour primetime block of live programming from Los Angeles. One will be a talk, information, interactive element show involving a studio audience and people at home, which will be starting this fall from 8 to 9 Eastern Time. And then right after that, they're going to do a live comedy variety satire show with elements from Los Angeles and elements from Mexico City. I think that's a very interesting counter program to telenovelas or weekly or something called the short series that Telemundo, Univision, and so forth are doing. In terms of programming, and Canelo, by the way, now is doing, has a music video service. Estrella, by the way, has a game show service. It's now in its like second or third year where they're doing original game shows that they're done in the United States. When it comes to Spanish language television, unscripted TV produced in the U.S. is at its height. You're now seeing, for example, Telemundo devoting 7 to 9 p.m. That's 7 to 9 p.m. that transverses both early evening and prime time with reality shows, mostly done in the United States. However, scripted television that is produced in the U.S. with U.S. Latino talent, actors, writers, directors, that is still the toughest nut to crack. I don't know why it's not done. The ad support is there. We are seeing a jump, huge jump in terms of advertisers, big, large, small, on the national level, jumping into Spanish language TV in all sorts of ways, including many websites and mobile apps are now doing Spanish language TV. That is a great thing. But sooner or later, I think that Spanish language television is going to have to address this issue of why can't we have weekly or nightly series done in the United States, not Mexico, not Puerto Rico, not Spain. That's fine. But how about more done in the U.S. that's relevant with U.S. Latino talent on both sides of the camera? It's time. I think you're going to see some progress there. Canelo's doing made-for-TV movies. I understand that they're going to do many of them in the United States. I would love to see here in New York, Anna Castillo, the head of the Mayor's Office of Entertainment, try to get any of the Spanish language networks to do a show, a dramatic series produced here in New York, New York City. We're still waiting for it in terms of its entirety. So I think there's a big opportunity in the Spanish language market and the bilingual market also with services like Nuestro TV and, again, Me Too TV. I think there's a real opportunity here for scripted television to really take a big leap up in terms of Spanish language, bilingual, and English language aimed at the fast-growing Latino marketplace, which is now around 65 million people.
Absolutely, yeah. You have all the talent that you need here, so that really shouldn't be an issue. It's just a matter of, as you say, commitment on the part of the institutions to make it happen. As I teased out at the beginning of the show here, it is very exciting that there is now one unified hub of where people can find everything with Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Because as I say, we've been linking on our Ultimate Links page to your sub-site, if you will, or whatever it would be at Media Village. And I know that still is going to exist here, but having a centralized hub for this, your own URL for all of the different multimedia aspects of Tomorrow Will Be Televised is a great development, Simon, no doubt about it.
Yeah, this has been an incredible year so far, and we're not even 6 months in, but we have picked up a lot of podcast locations. We are now on Audacy, that's AUDACY, which is formerly CBS Radio and Intercom. We are on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on iTunes. We just picked up Zencastr, that's Zencastr. We're part of their creator network. We hope to maybe get some ad support or ad revenue from that, as well as expand our podcast outreach. And as you hinted to, Rick, we now have, we have had for nearly about 9 months our own website. It's from a wonderful organization called On Podium. Guitarist Vegas approached me with it, and it's been really a terrific thing. It is now, a few months ago, we turned it into tomorrowbetelevised.com. People can hear our episodes there. They can also have a question box, so if they have a question about television or any of the topics we cover, they can get in the box, and we put it on the air, and we get it on the air. They get the credit, obviously, for it. So it's really wonderful that the podcast community has really developed our show, and tomorrowbetelevised.com has also been a great move for people to go to. And it's opened a lot of doors for us also in terms of getting guests on the show, which is really, really terrific. And so to the podcast community, I say thank you for taking our show. To Guitars Vegas and the Gang On Podium, thank you for what you've done with our website and really made it a wonderful site for people to go to and catch up on recent episodes. And, of course, we are still a simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio on Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Sometimes, by the way, we are on Thursday or Wednesday with an additional episode. In fact, we've had to go more toward 3-episode weeks because of all the activity that's going on in TV. We've had a lot of great guests this year so far. As we do this on our show coming up, we're doing a special episode tomorrow with the creator of American Born Chinese, the brand new Disney Plus hit. We're going to have on our regular show this coming Friday the producer behind the executive director of Based on a True Story, the new Peacock true crime comedy thriller series. A lot of people are going to be talking about that, which premieres, by the way, tomorrow as we do this. A whole bunch of other things. And we're getting a lot of great people. A lot of the new networks that are being put together and distributed on smart TV sets. The Vitamin Champ bundles are coming to our show. So, and by the way, that's another exciting thing in terms of diversity. We are seeing more people of color, more organizations of color, launch new networks that are both aimed at their particular target audience, but also the rest of us as well. Like Chime TV, the Asian American network that launched on Charter Communications, with the Spectrum brand across the country. They're also going to be doing smart TV distribution too. We have new networks aimed at the African American community, like Blavity TV. I mentioned Western TV and Canela Media and so forth. We have a Netflix for Native Americans called Red Nation, which we focused on last year. So it's really an amazing time in terms of what is going on. And more importantly, with diversity, we are seeing more people of color in positions where they can green light shows, get shows going. Whether it's at NBC Universal, Bella Bajarian, the head of global content at Netflix, people at ABC, Channing Dungey, the head of Warner Brothers Television. So you're seeing a lot more people of color in those positions, which will say, okay, we like what you're doing. And don't forget, we have Honest Collective through Hulu, which is putting together a lot of shows and specials and miniseries, which is headed by Tara Walden, the former head of Freeform. So it's an amazing time right now, a more diverse time in television right now. And hopefully the writers and the Alliance of Motion Picture Keepers will get back to that bargaining table and work this deal out. It can be done, especially now the Directors Guild is in the process of ratifying a new 3-year contract, which addresses many of the topics that the writers have been going for, which, by the way, they're right to go for, such as where do we stand in terms of artificial intelligence? The writers really are committed that they do not get obsolete because of artificial intelligence. And they want the producers to put in their contract, in language, for everyone to see, hey, writers matter, and no matter how AI gets developed as a way to create and produce television or movies or other forms of entertainment, we have a job. We matter. We're in control.
Yes, and that is going to be something worth paying attention to as far as how that plays out. And as you had alluded to just before that, a couple of the different areas that, as we'd said previously, you are an expert in, among other subsets of the entertainment and technology nexus here, minority oriented programming. Of course, there are so many different subsets of this that are right in your wheelhouse as well. Of course, the nexus of sports and TV being one of them, and of course people can find your analysis on that as well on another platform that you're on.
Yes, last year I was approached by Sports Grid Network, which is a television service that's available on smart TV sets, smart devices, by on Amazon Freevee and other multi-channel bundles, which, by the way, they're going to be launching a Spanish language service this summer. We had had the head of Sports Grid on our show 2 years ago. And because of the feedback on that, and because I've often covered sports one way or another on our on Smart Me Televised and in Media Village, they invited me to do a regular segment on sports, which I am doing. So every Wednesday or Thursday on a show called Sports Newswire, which is a daily hour news information show, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Sports Grid. I now have a chance to talk about the world of TV sports, where it's at, where it's going. I do the segment from Midtown Manhattan, right near Verso, wonderful restaurant in the Hotel Renaissance on West 35th Street. If you get a chance to go down there, great, great space, great eating, great food, wonderful calamari, by the way. We get a chance for 5 or 10 minutes to talk about what's going on in the world of TV sports. Today, for example, we talked about the LIV Golf Tour PGA Tour merger, which I can tell you has got the golf world and the TV world on fire. In fact, there may be a possibility that this deal might arouse the ire of U.S. regulatory agencies, maybe with an antitrust lawsuit. We don't know yet, but But we talked about that. We talked about the ratings for the NBA Finals, the ratings, the early viewership for the Stanley Cup Finals, which for the first time ever is on cable totally. TNT is the originating network, but it's also simulcast on fellow Warner Bros. Discovery cable services, TBS and True TV. We have talked recently about the rise in lacrosse programming in different places, ESPN and others. And also talked about all sorts of different things in sports. A lot of fun. Craig is the host of Sports Away. He's down in Florida. I'm in New York. And it's a great time. And Sports Grid is, I'm happy to say, catching on. And it's a wonderful thing to do. So thank you to Sports Grid Network for the opportunity. And we've done it for like 8-9 months. And it's been a real treat. Great pleasure.
Absolutely. And it is always a quality decision by any medium to bring you on and be able to pick your brain. And it has been our honor and pleasure to be able to do this for many years on this program with you. One of our earliest minted FDH Lounge dignitaries outside of the original dignitaries. And again, always look forward to it, Simon. And as you alluded to at the top, yes, it had been too long. We'll have to make sure it's not nearly as long before the next time we get you on. Thank you so much for making time for us today, Simon, to break down all of these very important elements.
Always a pleasure, Rick. Congrats to you and all your staff for keeping on, always all the best. And let's do this again soon. Take care.
Oh, very. Thank you very much. So very much appreciated on our part, Simon. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1623.